Hello, everyone. Seven Investing CEO Simon Erickson here, and thank you for listening to the Seven Investing Podcast. Our podcast is made possible by our subscribers, who allow us to empower you to invest in your future each and every month. In exchange, we give our subscribers exclusive access to our monthly stock market recommendations from each of our lead advisors. To support this podcast and join other Seven Investing fans in our exclusive subscribers forum, where we discuss the latest market moves in real time, go to 7investing.com/subscribe to subscribe to 7 Investing today. We're here to empower you to invest in your future. We are 7 Investing. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this edition of our 7 Investing podcast, where it's our mission to empower you to invest in your future. If you'd like to learn more about our long-term investing approach and also see our stock recommendations each and every month, visit us at 7investing.com/subscribe. I'm your host, Simon Erickson. We're going to be talking about digital assets today. The World Wide Web, the information superhighway, the internet has become quite a popular place over the past few decades. I'm very excited to welcome my guest, Mohit Tater, to the show today. He's the CEO of Black Book Investments, also a tenured expert when it comes to setting up shop online, buying and selling businesses, and also managing them. Mohit, thanks very much for joining me today on the 7 Investing Podcast.
Thanks for having me, Simon. That was a generous intro. Thank you so much.
Now, Mo, I've seen previous interviews of yours. I'm a little familiar with your story about how you kind of got with blogging and then bought some properties, and now hundreds of thousands of dollars of cash flow.
But it already.
Let me jump into the punchline, though. Let me ask you, with everything that you've seen over the last 10 or 15 years or so of doing
years,
this, how has the internet changed the most, do you think?
I think it's much more dynamic now. There are much more creators today than there were 10 years ago. There's much more content. Everyone has a phone, and there's much more video now rather than, you know, just text only. So text is kind of taking a backseat right now, and video is like at the forefront. And it's only going to capture more market share in the coming year. So that's one thing that, and you know, video appeals to everyone. Like, you know, someone even who's not well-read or well-educated, they can create a video and that might go viral. Whereas, you know, if it were just for the text-based content, you'd have to be like thoughtful or intellectual, or, you know, have to have your own ideas to write something meaningful. But with videos, I mean, there's all kinds of videos that are, you know, going crazy. Like, it could be just spoof videos or funny videos, and you don't need brains to do those. I mean, you can be a kid and do those. So it's put more power in the hands of people as creators, I would say.
Yeah, and one of those transitions we've seen, like you're mentioning, the cat videos, you know, or any other funny videos. I mean, you've kind of seen the rise of things like TikTok, right? Smaller communities, versus seriously, just these massive properties. Can you talk a little bit about how advertising has changed, you know, from text and, you know, just display ads that were very simple to a much more complex internet we have now?
Yeah, I mean, it used to be Google AdSense back in the day, and there was no other choice, to be honest. And there was like media.net also, but there's been a lot of new players in the industry, like AdThrive, which is now Raptive, MediaVine. So programmatic ads, display ads are like on the up, and they're on the rise right now, not just for text content, but of course also, you know, for video related video content also. So ads are taking over, and, you know, as you know, all like the big, except let's say maybe Apple, I think Google, Facebook, Twitter, all of these companies rely on ads, I mean, for their revenue. So they're here to stay. They've only grown in the last 5-10 years, and clicks used to be for advertisers. Clicks used to be cheaper, but it's gotten costly now, too much. So, which means that there's more advertising dollars available, you know, for, and there's more people, more companies advertising ever than before. So, yeah, I mean, display ads and ads in general have, you know, gone up quite a lot in the past few years. There were talks that, you know, ads are dead and everything, but I don't see them going anywhere, because the big companies, they rely on ad revenue for that's their business model. So they're here to stay. They're only going to grow from here. Yeah.
And how about smaller publishers too, right? Certainly the largest, you know, getting all the traffic, the largest sites out there that we're already familiar with, of course, they're monetizing with advertising. Yeah. Is it the same if you're a smaller publisher? Are you still working with Google and trying to place display ads, or has that changed at all in the last couple of years?
Yeah, even for smaller players, I'd say they have other options other than Google AdSense. So Ezoic is a player that they allow sites that don't have too much traffic, but they allow them to be on their platform. And they usually make better with Ezoic than they would with AdSense. And then there's media.net, then there's AdThrive, different levels of traffic requirements for these two companies. And that's where you can unlock the higher RPMs for your site because they have better advertisers, their inventory is better, their advertiser publisher matching is better so that they can optimize for every click. They can optimize for impressions on your site based on your niche and the demographic they have. So yeah, it has gotten better. Earlier it was like very generic, but now with cookies and everything, you only see targeted ads. And those are really valuable to your, or in specific to the readers of that particular publication. So no matter how small or big of a publication you are, I think there is a lot of revenue to be generated. Not just in ads, I'd say affiliate revenue is also big, by the way. So yeah, doesn't matter if you're a big name publisher or a small time single person writer, you can make a living pretty much today writing.
Yeah. And then the mechanism for advertising, I wanted to ask your thoughts about the third party cookie. You know, obviously regulators have really kind of brought the hammer down a lot of big tech companies tracking the internet. The third party cookie has been the mechanism of identifying people and, how their browser was going through. We've seen both Google and Facebook and several others saying they're going to phase those out over the next couple of years. Is the third party cookie still going to be around for a while, or are we starting to see a transition for how, behavior on the internet is being tracked?
So not yet. It's here to stay for a while. I mean, it's not going anywhere. And it's not a bad thing, to be honest. Like, people think of it as a bad thing, but I'll tell you what, like, if you're on the internet, your data is public anyways. There's no such thing as privacy if you are on the internet. Okay. So that's one thing. So, and if you're going to see ads, you might as well see ads that are targeted to you, then see something that you're not interested in, because I often discover really good things by targeted ads and which I'm interested in. And I maybe sometimes end up buying those things. So I'm all for it because I know that my data is public because I'm on the internet. Privacy is just something that, it's non-existent. So might as well get targeted with relevant ads, rather than irrelevant ones. So I think cookies are here to stay for a while. Even if they go, there will be maybe some other mechanism that these companies will devise to track user data because once you've done targeted advertising, I mean, there's no going back because those were the bad, old days and where you didn't have the targeting that you have at the level they're doing it today. And then you would see random ads of random stuff. But with the targeting, it's so super targeted that you only see, you're talking about it and then you see an ad for it the next day. That's the level of targeting that there is today. So I don't think there's any going back from this. Maybe they'll change the mechanism, but yeah, they'll still be targeted ads in the future.
Yeah. Mohit, could you tell us a little bit about what you do with Black Book Investments? Are you going out and, just like we might be buying houses and collecting rent checks from them in the physical world, are you doing the same thing with digital assets where you're buying properties and finding ways to monetize?
Pretty much similar, yeah. So what I do is with my company, Black Book Investments, is we buy and operate a portfolio of online businesses, which can include content websites, niche websites. We don't do e-commerce, but we are into tools and software also. So these are businesses that generate revenue already when we buy them. We don't buy businesses that don't generate revenue. And when we buy them, we try to look for opportunities where we can grow the revenue or maybe some low-hanging fruit. So it's just like how a real estate investor would, find a fixer-upper, get that for a good price, fix that up, increase the rents or either flip it, sell it. That's exactly what we do. We come in, we buy the property, we buy the digital asset, we buy the website, the business, whatever. We come in, we optimize it, we improve it, we increase the revenue. Then we either keep it in our portfolio or we sell it. But I am like a long-term cash flow guy. So I try and hold as much as I can. So the only difference between real estate and digital real estate is that what I do is more hands-on. Like with a rental property, I mean, you don't have to work on it every day, right? You can just maybe have, you know, collect your rent payments every month, or maybe fix something once in a while if it's broken. But what we do is we buy actual running, you know, business, active businesses that me and my team manage and run and grow. And that's the reason we are able to get a higher ROI for our investment. Because with real estate, you can get a cap rate of maybe 8, 10, 12%, maybe 15% if you're really lucky. But with us, we have been able to deliver 27, 28% annualized ROI to our investors over the past 10 years. And that's after our fee. That's after Black Book's fee. So just imagine, I mean, the scope of digital real estate in terms of the ROI you can get.
Sign me up, Mohit. I will gladly take a 27, 28% return after fees. I'll gladly pay you whatever you're charging. That's a great return for investors.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's Olly.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Are there things that you look for, though? You know, are there certain sites that you just have that you find very appealing? Either they're in the right sector or they're getting a ton of traffic, or what do you see in those fixer uppers that really sticks out?
Yeah, so it's not that always we look for fixer uppers. What we look for is solid, stable, and growing assets. These sites are either, you know, doing a solid, stable revenue, or they're going up in the revenue and traffic numbers. We do not buy distressed or, you know, declining assets. I'm not a turnaround expert, neither do I have any ambition to turn around, you know, dying businesses or websites. I just go with the, you know, tide and then buy growing businesses. That's one thing. I try and buy something evergreen. I'd buy something that is probably, you know, in, let's say, the tech niche. Technology is going to be there. It might change, but technology is going to be there. As opposed to, let's say, I'm buying a super niche site about a particular game that might not exist after 2 years or 3 years. It might be the hot thing right now, but might not exist in 3 years. So I look for long-term play. So let's say whether that thing is going to be around 5 years from now or not. If that's a yes, then of course, we'll consider it. If not, then we'll not consider it. Then third thing is that there should be some low-hanging fruit for us to pick. So whether that should be an unmonetized stream of revenue. Let's say the site has display ads but hasn't implemented affiliate revenue, we can come in and do that. Or let's say vice versa. Or let's say, you know, we can come in and negotiate higher commissions with the existing affiliates so that we can increase the income from day one with the existing traffic. Or we can, you know, just something as simple as swapping out a display ad network with another one. Let's say I am on MediaWine and I can get my other sites on MediaWine too with a lower amount of traffic threshold, as opposed to if I were just signing up, with them as a new publisher. So I see a guy doing, you know, his site or her site on AdSense. They're making whatever $2,000-$3,000 on there. And I know that if I move this to MediaWine, I'm going to immediately see a bump of 30% in the revenue. And I can do that. So I look for those properties, so low-hanging fruit. And it should be something that I should be, you know, able to understand. Should not be something obscure that I cannot even follow the niche or the topic, because if I cannot see if the writer has done justice to what the topic is, what the articles are. So it should be something that at least I can understand, if not, you know, write about, because I don't write, of course, but we hire experts. So it should be fairly relatively easy to write, find experts for, to write on the site also, because we only work with experts and not generic writers for our content, for all our websites. And that truly does really well, I mean, compared to generic research content by a random generic writer. And the last thing is, you know what, I see who the seller is, what their motivation is, you know, for selling. I like to buy from people who have done this as a passion, as a hobby. And maybe they've, you know, either just died out, fizzled out, or maybe they're in need of some cash. And I ideally try to stay away from people who do this for a living, because their job is just to make that site to sell. And I don't, you know, prefer that. I prefer to buy from someone genuine who has put in time and effort and their expertise into that site. So yeah, these are some of the things that I look for.
You mentioned a couple of times on your site and the materials I've seen that you talked about before, about the digital asset life cycle. Can you talk a little bit about what that means? You know, do websites evolve over time?
Yeah, I mean, they do, but then there are sites that we have been holding for 8, 9, 10 years now, and they're still with us, and we're still doing the same thing on them. So, but yeah, for a typical life cycle of a website that we buy for an investor, let's say, it's like a 2.5-3 year time span for the whole life cycle to complete. Some investors like holding longer. They don't want to sell because they like the cash flow. But typically, you know, what you do is you identify an asset, you negotiate, you do the due diligence, buy it. That's going to take 3 to 4 months. Once you've, you know, bought it, then you'd come in and, you know, implement your growth strategy, implement your skills to grow that website. That takes about, let's say, 6 to 12 months to, you know, do everything that you have planned for that site. So that we're like almost 18 months in now. Then you collect the cash flow from it, let's say for another 6 to 12 months, and reduce the expenses. And when you're at the 2.5 year mark from starting, then you can start thinking about, you know, selling it. So, you know, another 6 months and then you list it. And since the expenses have been less in the last 12 months, your profits are maximized. And because of that, you can get a higher price for your website because the profit is more and people buy on the multiple of the profit. So if your site is doing, let's say, $100,000 a year in net profit, you can maybe get $300,000 to $400,000 for it. And if you are having too many expenses, then that takes away from the profit, that takes your site's value lower. So yeah, you optimize for the first year, year and a half, let it collect revenue for another 6-12 months. And then we, you know, this way, we're able to, in 3 years, we're able to get an annualized ROI of 27-30%, which includes the dividend payouts, the income that you get from the website while running it, and also any capital gains that you might realize when you sell it. So, yeah.
Fantastic. Now, I've got to ask Mohit the question that everyone knows I'm going to ask you, which is AI, which is, I hear this about 17 times a day, GPT, right? Everyone thinks this is disrupting everything, including the internet. Certainly GPT is a different way of looking for information than typical Google search. What's your thoughts on OpenAI, on GPT, on all the developments we're seeing here?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of doom and gloom right now in the industry.
Right, everywhere, yeah.
I think there's nothing to be afraid of, first of all. I also think that AI and, you know all these tools, ChatGPT, GPT-4, they're not a fad. I think they're here to stay and are only going to improve over time. But they will augment existing search. They will not replace the existing search that as we see today. The reason being, AI needs data and content to output. And if there is no original content or data written by original actual writers, there is nothing for the AI to, you know, learn from, first of all. So there will always be demand for high quality original content by genuine experts, niche experts. So that's one thing. The other thing is, if, you know, all these companies like, you know, Google, Microsoft, Facebook. They all rely, you know, heavily on ads, ad revenue. So even if it's, you know, normal search is replaced by ChatGPT, Google will find a way to integrate that into the existing search model so that they can show ads and collect revenue, and it will augment. So what I've seen is, even though you are like asking Google Bard about whatever question that you might have, but it will give you the list of articles on the site that, you know, it has taken the reference from. And more often than not, you'd want to go and check out those sites because you'd want to learn more about whatever topic you're researching or whatever product you're researching. And thirdly, I don't think it is so easy for, AI to replace the human nature, the tendency. We've been searching a particular way for the past 20 years since Google was around. It's not going to change overnight. Like, and even for people like us who are savvy, who are at the forefront of, you know, technology and updates in the industry, even I don't use ChatGPT. Like, I don't even remember last time I used it. I still use Google the way I used it 2 years ago. It's not going to change behavior overnight. So there's nothing to be afraid of it. It will augment existing search. And if not, it'll only increase the, you know, revenue and clicks and views for really good original content. And it will kind of, phase out, or basically generate content is going to lose out for AI. So that's the risk there is. So if you're doing generate content, then you are at a loss for sure. But if your content is top-notch and original, you have nothing to be afraid of, I feel.
And then my last question, Mo, is, I know that you're a traveler. I know that you spent a lot of time in India. You spent a lot of time in the US. I think you're traveling right now. You know, you've seen a bunch of different continents. Excluding China for a moment with this question, can you talk a little bit, compare and contrast how the internet is different in different regions of the globe? How it's regulated, how culturally it's seen, how people like to publish things. Can you maybe just talk a little bit of kind of the similarities and the differences between like India, North America, South America, Asia, anywhere you want to, but just kind of your perspective on that.
Yeah, I mean, just as a basic user of the internet, I think India is a little bit more restricted. To give you an example, let's say torrent websites are banned in India, so you cannot use a torrent website to download stuff. That's one thing. Pornography is banned in India, so you cannot use, you know, any pornography websites. Not judging whether they're good or bad, but just giving you an idea of what. TikTok is banned in India. Again, not saying it's good or bad, but it is banned. So the Indian government deems it not good for the Indian audience, so they banned it like 2-3 years ago. So there is censorship, but probably it might be for the better, because of course, if the government is taking a certain step, it is for the good of the people. Because, you know, if you think about it, I mean, TikTok is a form of entertainment, but it is a loss of productivity also, you know, when people spend mindless hours, you know, on it. So it just kind of decreases the overall productivity. So it's all for a reason, as opposed to in the US, where pretty much whatever I just documented, is nothing is banned out of those things. So yeah, I mean, it is a little different, but I mean, that's fine. I mean, it's not something that, you know, we cannot do without. You can always use a VPN. So yeah, I mean, and as for free speech, it is the same. I think it's the same in India as it is in the US. It's a democratic country, so it's a democracy, so people have the right to the freedom to speech. Yeah.
Well, fantastic. Well, once again, Mohit Tater is the CEO and founder of Black Book Investments, kind of an expert out there in buying and selling internet properties and also operating them for several decades now. Mohit, thanks very much for being a part of our 7 Investing podcast today.
Thank you, Simon. Really good to be on the pod. Thank you.
And thanks everybody for tuning into this episode. We're here to empower you to invest in your future. We are 7 Investing.